The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, December 13th, 2012. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis from Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In my backyard's Lisa Braltz looks at a growing trend involving food and cell phones this half hour. Hey, have you called this number yet? 217-244-9455. We're in the midst of our 36-hour holiday pledge drive. If you value and use our agricultural marketing service, now is the time to call with your gift of financial support. The number to call with a $100 pledge is 217-244-9455.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
All right, let's look at the last trades for this Thursday afternoon in Kansas City, December wheat. 857 and three quarters, up 4.5. May at 874 and three quarters, down 1 and a quarter. In Chicago, December wheat 793, down 1 and three quarters. May 820 and a half, down 4. December corn 713, down 8. July 721 and a half, down 2 and a half. December of 13, 625 and a half, down a quarter. January soybeans are 1476, up 2 and a half. July 1440, down 3 quarters. November of 13, 1308 and a quarter, down 9 and a quarter. December soybean meal 462.50 is up $3. December soybean oil 48.67 is down 51. December live cattle 126.25 down 10. February 131.60 down 20. January feeders 152.87 and a half, up 12 and a half. And December lean hogs are 82.15. They are up 7 and a half. And those are your last trades in Chicago and Kansas City. Joining us in the studio to talk about today's gift giving is Les Schulte and Bob Culkeen. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, David.
It's great to be here with you.
What do you got, Bob?
What do I have? Well, WILL Ag, or Will Ag Analysis, and business partner Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, says that Illinois Public Media Agriculture provides something you don't often hear on the radio anymore.
The value of the service is really the diversity of information, different contributors and their perspectives, their locations, just being able to contribute from a lot of different angles. A lot of people like to accumulate information and draw their own conclusions, and I think the variety of people that you have on your programming definitely help them in that process.
Thank you, Bill. You know, if the variety of analysis, in-depth marketing analysis, have been helpful to you and your farming operation, please go to your phone right now and make a pledge to keep WILL Agricultural growing and growing strong. The number to call is 217-244-9455. What do you think, Les?
Well, you know, Bob, ag has always been a big part of this radio station, and when we know that when people work in the agricultural business, sometimes they need that information right away. There are times when you turn to WILL News and Agriculture for the latest, and we've got ways of delivering the latest news to you on the radio, of course, in text messaging, in our phone update service, and of course, we have analysts, 21 analysts on throughout the week. So we think this is a premium service, but it's only done with your help and with your support. So make that call and make that pledge right now at 217-244-9455. Or if it's easier for you, go online to willpledge.org.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave. And before we get started, I just kind of want to second the idea that farmers in this listening audience and people that catch us on the internet to send their contributions to WLLL, because there is just no doubt about it. There's about every perspective of the market you can receive. And then, of course, then the individual farmer has to sort through that and make his decision. But there's definitely no lacking of information that a farmer can receive by listening to WLL Ag programming. And for someone that's been generally skeptical about all kinds of organizations and making donations, this is the one that you can be assured that is going directly to ag programming and benefiting our listening audience. So I just kind of wanted to second that.
Thank you, Dan. 217-244-9455, the number to call. But don't call until after Dan has his comments today. Dan, I know you were traveling today, but I did want to mention in the March corn, we did some testing. We went down to 715, which is sort of a support level, managed to bounce off of it, and finished now with a settlement price 720 and a quarter today.
Well, there's no doubt about it that this December is turning into kind of a long liquidation type month. End of the year has a tendency to be long liquidation to start with, but due to the uncertainty of or the, I'd say, the expectations that tax rates are going to go up across the board starting January 1. That is encouraging anybody that has any kind of profit, whether it's in an ETF fund, which is a basket of commodities, or a corn EFT, as they redeem their shares, take the profits based upon today's tax rates, then that is forcing the fund crowd to liquidate their positions or to reduce that position. So I think a lot of this weakness that we're seeing in the complex has to do with the year-end liquidation and the idea that tax increases are going to come across up after the first year. So what we're seeing is a lot of people rolling income into the 2012 year, and it kind of makes December more noisier than probably what it would normally have been. From a technician, though, and seasonal follower, I don't like the idea to see this corn market dripping lower in here since we're already into the second week of December, because seasonally we should be climbing higher. So at least in the near term here, we're going counter-seasonal, and anytime you go counter-seasonal, sometimes those moves are much more vicious in the direction of what they are. And I think that is what we're seeing here in corn. And it's just feeding more and more liquidation. And hopefully, maybe once we get through this and we start the new year, if we make it to the new year, I guess, isn't the end of the world supposed to come here in another week?
Yes, it is. I believe that movie came out 3 years ago predicting that.
Yeah. So if we make it to the new year, I think, and I do believe we will make it to the new year, that I think you will see the fund crowd begin to reposition themselves in the commodity complex. But everybody wanted to roll their income into this current year, and I think that's kind of been kind of a negative. Corn has got its own special negative, and that's export demand is absolutely off the charts to the downside. And that doesn't look like that is going to come back with any kind of gusto. There might be a three-month window in here where export demand begins to pick up. But if everything goes well in South America, they're going to be back competing again with us during the spring. spring months. So the corn market is reflecting ideas that corn export number is 150 to 200 million bushels less than what USDA has on the balance sheet. That is just taking a little more pressure off of the corn balance sheet for the market to kind of have to ration inventories. But we're still not going to know a whole lot until the January report.
It's actually, it seems like a taffy pull. You, on one hand, in the corn market, you have exports, which are just terrible. But on the other hand, you have livestock and perhaps the need to do some rationing there. So what wins out in the end?
Well, we need to find out what the exact supply is, and I don't think anybody in the trade has a real comfort level on that yet. Yes, USDA has issued some reports, but we're going to go through. They've already did their December 1 survey on grain stocks, and my guess is that envelope will be opened up during the January report, and then they will have a better sampling of what actually we produced, how many acres we harvested, and probably firm up the supply side of the equation a little more. Now, it could be higher, it could be lower. For the most part, I think the trade thinks it could be down a little bit. But once we get the supply number in place, and then it'll also give us a general idea of what feed disappearance has been during the first quarter, and we can extrapolate that out. So the January report is going to be real pivotal, probably more so than it ever has, I think, at the corn market. And we'll have to kind of go from there. But, yeah, when you look at everything, it does look like feed usage, livestock is going to have to be rationed. But you got to keep in mind that we've been importing South American corn into the United States for several months now. Now, USDA only has $100 million on their balance sheet. It could be upwards of twice that. So we have been importing corn in the United States. So that feed usage number could be being picked up. Corn imports could be picking that up a little bit. We may not have to ration as much as what we think.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Les Schulte, Dan Zwicker, a long time. I think he's probably
analyst
been on the air well over 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And apparently his advice is don't max out those credit cards yet. I think
that's
that
right.
Bill is still going to come. And you get great advice from guys like Dan and all of the analysts that we have here on WILL. You know, WILL has been serving this community for the past 90 years because listeners like you have felt it's worthy of their support. And that's why your contribution today to ensure that this station will continue to be a viable community asset for the next 90 years. That's what we're planning for now. I think that's
absolutely
right, Bob. I
think absolutely.
I'll be doing agriculture when I'm 180.
That's
wow.
Right, Dave. You'll be hanging in there.
We'll... How old is he now?
He's about 110.
Okay. Wow. You know, Dan has he definitely was an ambassador for the station. In the statement he said before he offered his advice, he really talked to the farmers and the agricultural community who's out there. Thank you very much, Dan. And if you believe what Dan said about what WILL Agriculture does day in and day out for you, you need to give us a call. That phone number is 217-244-9455.
Or support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Coming up next, Lisa Brault explores a growing trend regarding food and cell phones in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
About 5 years ago, many of us started hearing a sound at the dinner table we'd rarely, if ever, heard before. Cameras. The advent of smartphones, one of which is responsible for that cute shutter sound you just heard, ushered in an era, still going strong, where people can photograph anything, anywhere. And not only that, they can share these photographs directly with other people via email, text message, and social media, sites like Facebook and Twitter, or, more recently, Instagram, which is specifically for photo sharing. And while people still enjoy taking and sharing photos of their family and friends and landmarks and flowers and stuff like that, what they seem to enjoy most is taking photos of food in all its states, from raw to cooked to consumed. And not just with their phones either, but with point-and-shoot digital cameras and more complicated, fancy cameras. Sometimes the photos are good. Food is incredibly difficult to photograph well. And sometimes the photos are, well, not so good. Hey, I'm guilty. I've gone to a few special dinners and taken out my phone as each course was brought out to capture the food as I was seeing it right then, in that moment. I photographed eggs in a boiling water bath as I was poaching them. Food caught in the act of cooking. I've taken photos of food in the perfect early light of a humid summer morning at farmers markets with both a fancy camera and my phone's camera. And I admit to enhancing some of these images on my computer, and I've even posted the results on websites and social media. I've done these things. But I would never, ever say I'm a professional photographer. I'm just a person who likes taking photos of food, and I'm glad to be able to take them so easily and to share and be shared with. But then I started hearing about restaurants banning patrons from taking photos of food while they were dining. Not locally, thankfully. But in all seriousness, there's a bit of a backlash against food photo enthusiasts who like to document their food that seems to be getting stronger. This is Justine Bersoni.
I'd much rather look at photos of a menu and go from there than to read a description.
She's a professional photographer who likes taking photos of food with her phone and her fancy camera. I asked her about what I'd read about restaurants forbidding any kind of photography while people were eating.
I mean, I kind of understand how a chef might be offended by someone pulling out their iPhone to take a less than quality picture of what they consider to be a high quality meal that they've presented in a particular way, which then they have no control over of what that image is going to be that this person puts out on Facebook. But I still think that's kind of nonsense.
So while she likes taking photos of food in restaurants and outside them, she also enjoys looking at other people's photos of food, especially if they include visuals like a cooking technique or the inside of someone's kitchen or a visit to a farm.
I really like when people who are just doing food photography in their house too kind of show the process, like how they made it or working in the kitchen, and they write about like how they made it or what's a part, like what the ingredients are, or even recipes to a certain degree, depending on how detailed people get. But yeah, having that background, which I've gotten more into, you know, going out with Thad Morrow and checking out the farms and seeing like where his ingredients are coming from and the farmers who are cultivating the ingredients. And I don't know, it's really, that whole part for me is really interesting.
And when she's in a restaurant, it's a sensory thing in the way that a photo of a favorite beach or cityscape can help her remember a food experience more deeply.
There's something about, and I know that the couple that you had interviewed most recently said, you know, you eat with your eyes. And it's true. I do. When I pull out the camera first and the food is hot and it's been put in front of me at the table, I'll get looks sometimes like, you should just eat your food, like put the camera down, it's hot, you know, start eating. I'm like, I've already started eating, like you can physically start eating. I'm one step ahead of you.
So, okay, there's the aesthetics of food and photos, but there's also the concept of crowdsourcing a sense of place, of using the photos as part of a field guide. The best field guides, in my opinion, feature photos. Viewers or readers can learn a lot about a place, a restaurant, yes, but also a locale, by seeing photos of the food that can be found there, whether it's something still on the vine or prepared in a home kitchen or made in an eating establishment. Maybe it's an empty plate. In any event, they're not illustrations. They're not words. They're images captured by people who had an experience and wanted to document it before they ate it and it disappeared forever. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Joining us now with a look at cash grain analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, basis continues to be strong, and I keep thinking that come January, we're going to see a pickup in export demand, or corn is going to become scarcer. And we're really going to see something along the lines of a basis-led rally leading futures higher. Is that possible?
It's very possible. You know, obviously there's some basis implications due to the river that need to be ironed out, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how we move forward. But bottom line, both on corn and beans here domestically, we're awfully tight. So what you're saying is, by all means, most likely going to be very possible.
How strong could that basis-led rally be? With how much over could we see?
Well, I think just on regular old corn, you know, you're probably looking at running some decent overs again. You know, I could see some 20 to 30 overs after the first year. And then on high-quality corn, Dave, I think, you know, in certain areas, you can name your price maybe.
How much high-quality corn do you think is out there? I know there was a big push to get corn in early because of the aflatoxin issues.
Yeah, I think that there's certain areas where there's not much high-quality corn available, and then there's other areas where it's a little more abundant. And I think what you're going to see is the areas that really had good quality corn, it's already, a lot of it's been pulled away to non-traditional places, places that didn't have high-quality corn. So it's going to be a really interesting tug-of-war here, and I think there's probably not near as much out there as what we need, I think, is the main point of emphasis here.
Are we making too much of the idea that the Mississippi could slow down? I don't think anybody thinks it's going to close completely unless the water level really drops below 9 feet, but slow down enough where it really matters because the exports have fallen out of bed.
Well, I think that any time that they start talking about it slowing down, and, you know, a couple of the processors we've talked to that are north of the point of emphasis, you know, they've already been telling us that they're slowing down, and actually the bean basis backed off a little bit on a couple places on the river we deal with. So I think there's already indications that there's a pretty serious situation. It's not really a smoke and mirrors deal at all.
What's your expectations while we got you on the phone, because we know you also farm, for looking toward beginning to marketing next year's crop?
Well, I think the last month or so, you know, there's been some great opportunities, and obviously we've taken it on the chin here recently on the corn, you know, 20 cents down. But bottom line, whenever you look at the input prices, it's still quite profitable on most people's farms to be selling corn in this area, and I don't see a problem with booking a portion of your needs because you can always cover it in the future.
Why don't you go ahead and give us your prices today then, please,
yeah,
sir?
Yeah, certainly. $7.16 on cash corn, $5.99 for next fall, $14.75 on cash beans, and $12.74 for next fall.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Yep, thanks, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, have you tried this website yet, willag.org? There you can subscribe to our free ag e-newsletter, fundamentals and technicals alike. willag.org. Click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. In the studio now is Les Schulte and Bob Culkeen, and I was reflecting a little bit earlier as I was hearing from Dan Zwicker. There are some tax advantages available right now if people were to make a contribution to the station before the end of the year.
Absolutely. You get that that contribution in before December the 30th, and you can take that off on your taxes as a charitable contribution. Or, Bob, someone can also make a gift of stock.
Absolutely.
To WILL.
Yeah, and we're finding that's becoming more popular. If you are interested in that, you could give Donda Beer to call here at the station. And if you're ready to go with another contribution and of support, the phone number there is 217-244-9455. You know, timely market analysis and weather information is given to you each day from Will ag. Isn't that the truth?
It is the truth, Bob. And again, just like our market analysts, where we have 21 different analysts on throughout the week, we have five or six different weather forecasters who come on throughout the week and give a variety of forecast, variety of weather opinions.
Yeah.
You know, we really feel that it's important that you not just get one point of view, that you get many sources of information so that you can make your own marketing decisions.
Absolutely. I've met a lot of farmers in the area. As I wear my ball cap that says Will Ag on there, I had the opportunity to live
out. And
you
look styling, by the way.
I do look styling. And I did have an opportunity to live out in Farmer City over the summer and spend some time walking on a farm and learning some of the language out there. I have a great respect for the people that I've met here in this community, and I know they're listening to us. So give us a call at 217-244-9455.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, what is it you want to talk about today?
Well, I think a little bit of the impact of the warm, mild temperatures and the dry weather, which is affecting winter wheat throughout almost all of the central winter wheat belt, that is from the southern plains northward up into the Dakotas, where we're not getting good emergence or good establishment of the crop. We don't see any end in sight, really, to the overall dry pattern, although we will get a respite from the dryness this weekend. We are going to see a storm system come out of the southwest and throw some precipitation across the eastern portions of the western corn belt and then right through the central corn belt Saturday and Sunday. But it'll be short-lived. I'm looking for amounts around the half-inch range on that. And then we'll go back into the mild pattern. It's been unusually mild so far this month. Central Illinois, the temperatures have averaged 12 degrees above normal for the month of December so far. We've got one more week of that. That's coming up this week. We get temperatures running above normal again, anywhere from 8 to 15 degrees above normal, warmest late in the weekend. And then we start to see cold weather. And by Christmas time, I think we'll finally be looking at some winter weather. I don't think we'll be seeing much in the way of snow, but we will see the colder temperatures coming back in about 10 days. So we've got cold weather on the way, but the impact of this mild and dry weather cannot be underestimated as far as the potential for spring crops are concerned when it's time for the wheat crop to come out of dormancy.
How much of that winter wheat crop do you think might be damaged? Could it be as much as 20, 25%?
Oh, I think it's more than that, probably. I think it's in the 40% that's been damaged. And must be remembered that when you look at total yields for hard winter wheat and soft winter wheat, 50% of that yield is determined prior to the crop going dormant. That is, if they don't get the moisture now, yes, you need it in the spring, but it doesn't do nearly as well for the crop coming only in the spring if it's been dry this far. And I think that's a significant impact we're going to see with this crop later on in the season, unless we get a very unusually wet type of pattern. I think it's too late to be wet right now with the crop going ahead for dormancy next week, when we get around Christmas time, when the really cold air comes in, and then you're not going to be able to do much for the crop prior to next spring.
About 30 seconds left. What else should we be taking a look at?
Well, we can look at rounded weather elsewhere. In South America, it's been very wet this past week in Brazil and the Argentine. So far, a little too wet, but I think they're settle for the wetness right now because put that moisture in the bank for them, and I think that crop is off to a pretty good start for their summer crop down there.
Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure.
Meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Did you give a pledge yet to this number, 217-244-9455? It's very simple. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express say, tell them that you're doing it in support of agriculture. This is Dave Dickey.